This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back in. It's Sharp Money here on VSIN. I'm Jeff Parles, Amal Shah, alongside Wine Tom Check here as well. All right, Amal, I'm not Dave Ross, I can tell you that, but we are going to talk the Cowboys here. I know you're super excited for that.
Well, it's just that we have so many Cowboy fans here. Ross, John Goulet, Femi, they're all Cowboy fans.
And none of them are from Dallas or Texas.
Forget the fact they're not from Texas. They're not even like remotely close to there.
I didn't realize Femi was a Cowboys fan.
Yeah, you know, you don't make that correlation, somebody growing up in Seattle?
Yeah, I didn't know that. I knew our program director, John Goulet, was.
He's from Connecticut. Why wouldn't you think he's a Cowboy fan?
Well, I knew that at least. And then Dave Ross, who wears the star on his sleeve, as he usually does. Earlier on Best Bets.
I was going to say, when he heard that the Cowboys are underappreciated, Dave lit up like a Christmas tree.
Happiest he's been in months.
Why I put this in the rundown. I need them all to kind of bring everyone down on the Cowboys.
Let me tell you right now, I'm not bringing them down. I still think they're the third best team in the NFC.
You're going out as big of a limb as I was with the Dodgers winning the West with saying that.
I don't disagree.
So Dallas right now to win the NFC, 6-1 to win the conference. Win total for the Dallas Cowboys, again, over at the DraftKings Sportsbook. You're looking at 9.5 with heavy juice on the over at -165 right now. So if you look at the Cowboys' schedule here, they open with the two New York teams. They play the Giants at MetLife, and then they play the Jets right out of the gate after that. So, look, Amal, I think common thought is that Dallas is the third best team in this conference. And I hate that I continue saying this, but Dallas needs to start 4-0 based off their schedule. They're favored at MetLife against the Giants. They're going to be a small favorite against the Jets in the home opener. They're going to be a gigantic favorite in Arizona, and they're going to be a pretty reasonably sized favorite against New England in week 4 in Arlington. If Dallas is serious about dethroning the Eagles in the East, you better start 4-0 with that schedule.
Well, I think you're just overlooking game 1 at the Giants on Sunday Night Football. That's not an easy game. I don't
think it's an easy game, but it's a game that if you're serious about winning the division, you win.
Maybe. You got the Jets at home. That won't be an easy one either. I think the Cardinals at the Cardinals and Patriots, those are manageable. Then you got to go again on Sunday Night Football to San Francisco at the Chargers on Monday Night Football. Wow, back-to-back weeks out on the West Coast.
Tough back-to-back there. There's no arguing that. Yeah. And look, remember, Amal, the Cowboys swept the Giants a year ago. They beat them with Cooper Rush in one of the games as well, that week 3 game that no one could do anything, and then all of a sudden all the points came in the last 20 minutes of the game, destroying underbettors that night. But, you know, so the 9.5 feels right on Dallas. I think 10 is the more proper win total. We're more likely than not 10-7 probably gets it done for the 5 seed. 11 definitely gets you. If they repeat the 12-5 a year ago, they're definitely the top wild card again, Amal. But you look at the way that this all plays out for Dallas. Brian Schottenheimer, now the offensive coordinator. We know Kellen Moore, high profile, let go. McCarthy didn't see eye to eye with him. I'm just curious, and again, you say week 1's not an easy game. I don't think week 2 is an easy game, even though Dallas will be favored in that game against the Jets. But we're going to learn quickly of what this offense now looks like with Dallas. How much does this look like what Green Bay attempted to do with Rodgers? And what is Mike McCarthy as a regular season coach? I think Mike McCarthy is a regular season coach, the guy you're going to win a bunch of games with. But when the going gets tough, when the decisions get harder, that's when we've seen McCarthy fail throughout his NFL career.
Tend to agree with you, but I think some of the blame should fall on Aaron Rodgers as well, right? I mean, Rodgers, for some reason, has gotten a pass for his record in the NFC Championship games. Dallas, you mentioned, has opportunity to win 10 games, no doubt about it. They have the third best record in the NFL over the last 2 seasons. I just don't see why this Cowboys team, though, is looked at a 9.5 win total. I know the schedule's daunting. They're at Buffalo, at the Niners, at the Chargers. I don't think the Carolina game is going to be easy at the Eagles, of course. So Their schedule's definitely not an easy one, and they play, what, three Sunday night games?
Sunday night against the Niners, yeah. Sunday night against the Eagles, of course, Thanksgiving against Washington, Thursday night against Seattle. Both those teams will be on regular rest because they both play on Thanksgiving. Detroit is a Saturday game, which I didn't even realize that was a Saturday game.
I'll tell you what, if you're a Cowboys fan, you don't have to worry about ever paying for NFL Sunday ticket. You're on primetime TV or the big Fox game.
So of all, one thing that I will say, just looking at the back end of the schedule, like the middle part of that schedule, there's other than the Eagle game, they should go 4-1 in the middle.
Yeah.
Beat the Rams, beat the Giants at home, beat Carolina on the road in Charlotte, and beat Washington on Thanksgiving. You should go 4-1 in that middle portion. But that back end is really difficult. Now, there are some teams that could fluctuate where I'm low on Buffalo, even though that's a hard place to play.
Right.
You're lower on Miami, also not an easy place to play with the humidity in December. Seattle, you're low on. I'm high on the Seahawks, higher than you are on the Seahawks.
Dude, I just think you're high.
Not quite. Detroit is another. Detroit's another team where, Amal, I think the variance on Detroit is high. Yeah, I could see Detroit winning 11 games if everything goes right. I could also see them being the team that disappoints the most in the NFL.
I don't have an overwhelming opinion on the line, so I'm going to refrain from that. But I'm a little bit perturbed by everybody's affinity for the Seattle Seahawks. Also on the flip side, why does everyone love Miami?
Okay, so they made the playoffs last year. People like Mike McDaniel, which I think the jury is still out on him. I did not like how he executed in-game decisions in that playoff game, mm-hmm. where if they don't burn their timeouts over nonsense, yeah. they might accidentally win that game with Skylar Thompson playing quarterback. You have two elite wide receivers in Hill and Waddle. Mm-hmm. The defense is going to be improved because that defense was bad for the majority of last year.
Yep.
You have better talent on the defense. Jalen Ramsey will help that secondary. Fangio, look, we know Fangio was not a good head coach. We know
yeah.
this.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was an awesome defensive coordinator and is one of the best defensive coordinators over the last 15 years.
No argument there.
And it comes down to Tua. It all comes down to Tua. If you think Tua is going to stay upright and be able to play, let's say, 14 games, Miami to me is a 10-11 win team in the even in a difficult AFC.
I hate to say this because I like Tua a lot as a person, but if he gets injured and a potential concussion / head injury,
probably
one more time,
hit for him.
That's exactly what yeah. I was going to say. So I don't know. I can't back a team where I'm concerned about the health of the quarterback. They're not a consistent team for me. I'm not saying they can't make the playoffs, but I just don't understand picking the Miami Dolphins to win this division. For me, they would be the third choice in the AFC East.
Right now, again, you look at the way that it all breaks down too. Where week 15, week 16, they go back-to-back in the AFC East. Again, for me with Dallas, just pivoting back to the Cowboys, Amal, it really is, again, it's not going out on a limb, but it's just the way that it is.
Yeah.
Philadelphia is better than them. San Francisco, if the quarterback situation is competent, is better than them. And then Dallas's talent just wins out in a big way. The rest of the way, and as long as Dak can stay healthy for the majority of the season, and credit to McCarthy and the coaching staff figuring out a way to win those games with Cooper Rush and keep that season afloat. Because remember them all, after week one last year, where they look awful against Tampa on the first Sunday night of the year, they have Cincinnati coming in week two. Everyone's thinking, uh-oh, Cowboys are going to start 0-2. This is going to be a mess. Cooper Rush can't play. And then the Cowboys didn't lose with Cooper Rush. Until that game in Philadelphia. So, and look, you know you have a backup quarterback that is capable of at least winning some games. And in the end here, I just think of all, again, it's not a hot take by any stretch. Finishing with the 5 seed and being a favorite over the NFC South champion in the first round of the playoffs is probably what we get out of Dallas yet again like we did last year.
I would agree with you. I think Philly's going to win the division. I think Philly's the best team in that division. Who do you think's better out of Philadelphia and San Francisco?
Philly. Still Philly.
Easy. Slow down there, buddy. Take a minute before you answer.
No, because it's the quarterback. It's the quarterback play.
Yeah,
that's the big difference because you've said it. I'm not as aggressive as you on this, but you're in the camp that San Francisco is far and away the best roster when you take out the quarterback position in the NFL.
It's not even close, bud. There's nobody in the rearview mirror.
So I think it's closer with Philadelphia than you're giving it credit for. Now, there are questions on Philadelphia's coaching staff now because you lose both coordinators.
I'm not as concerned about that as other people.
I'm not either, but that yeah. is at least something to look at. How is Johnson going to do yeah. as the offensive coordinator? How's that defense going to look? Again, if you ask Philadelphia fans, they're thrilled that Jonathan Gannon's not there anymore. But Sirianni, like, let's not be stupid here. Sirianni is a big part of why that offense looks the way that it did. And he has done it as good of a job as I can remember at any head coach, adjusting to what his quarterback does well and catering his offense to what Jalen Hurts does well. That's why Hurts took the quantum leap, because that offense was so perfectly designed. And now with a legit number one wide receiver in year two and A.J. Brown there, Devontae Smith's in the proper role as the number two wide receiver. It doesn't matter who's playing running back. Doesn't matter if Miles Sanders went to Carolina. Who cares?
I don't disagree with you. I'm not really worried about the Miles Sanders departure, but Jalen Hurts is tremendous. You're right. That's the separation between San Francisco and Philadelphia at this point. By the way, your bet on Sabrina Ionescu to win the three-point shootout might have been one of the best bets of all time. Jeff, I know you weren't watching like I was.
Did I read that right? That she only missed three shots in the final round?
No, two.
Only missed two in the last
one. She made 23 out of 25.
Move over, Craig Hodges. Yeah. Move over.
23 out of 25.
See, you know what? Again, I was joking with Wyatt during the break. Of course, this would have been the bet I made. I ended up not playing it because I didn't get the price I wanted. It's obvious now. The only thing I can handicap properly is the WNBA three-point contest. That would be four straight years now having the right side of that. Should have made that play. And Ionescu with 37 in the final round, which is just insanity. Just down the road from us north at Mandalay Bay. We keep it rolling. We're going back to baseball next on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You're going to limited access to our VSiN.com/picks page, sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check out the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Four VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for only $19 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back in. It's Sharp Money. I'm Jeff Parles. I'm Amal Shaw. Wyatt Tomczyk here. So, Amal, let's go through this card on this Friday night in Major League Baseball, the first day back after the All-Star break. And let's go back to a pick that you gave earlier in the show. And, of course, new audience, as always, coming through. In New York, going to Flushing, Verlander, Urias, Mets trying to get off to a good start in this second half, trying to get back into things. Dodgers, as we know, in control in the NL West. By the way, Amal, just want to give you this one real quick. It has been 312 days since a Dodger starting pitcher has faced a batter for the fourth time in a game, which is the most in baseball and the longest stretch ever in baseball history.
Well, that's maybe why they can't win anything in the postseason. You don't have pitchers that can go deep into games. You know, here's the one thing everyone says, we don't want to face this guy this many times. The problem with using so many pitchers is you're rolling the dice that somewhere along the line, everyone's not going to have their best stuff.
Well, I mean, you know, at some point that is going to happen.
That's my point. So, like, there's such a fear within that organization. Oh, I can't face this guy in the lineup. I get some of the numbers. You know what? Somehow the Clayton Kershaws of the world, the Pedro Martinez, and all these other guys were able to survive for a long, long time. I mean, we're acting like these guys are just straight up bums as you get out there the third time. Well, it should be about, you know, a nine spot here because he's going through the lineup a third time.
Nine spot.
Is the way the Dodgers act.
Well, Amal, the Dodgers do this a lot. Do you like how they keep bringing in guys like postseason, like Urias and Kershaw out of the bullpen? And usually it never kind of works out for them.
No, you know, Josh Towers talks about all the time, former big league pitcher who is a contributor here at VSiN. He talks about pitchers and just players in general are very much creatures of habit. And he kind of broke down. He said the reason why teams will do well on a bullpen day is because the team is expecting it, right? The guy knows he's going to go in this time. But with the way the Dodgers do it, you're not sure when it's going to come. And it's such a quick hook in so many situations. It's almost like you're putting the pitcher in a position when when you have a great pitcher on a bad team, he feels immense pressure to keep that opponent to one, maybe two runs max because the offense can't score. And it's the same thing with the Dodgers, the way they treat their starting pitchers. You're putting them in a situation where you go, hey, if you go through this lineup pretty quickly, let's say you flip the lineup by, you know, the fourth inning, you allowed six runners on base, but you didn't allow any runs. You got a couple of double plays, whatever the case may be. And all of a sudden he's like, I got to get guys out of field pressure. I just don't like it. Allow them to go out there and pitch. These are guys you've drafted in the first round, elite level pitchers. Let them do what they do. At the end of the day, these guys are capable. I'm going to tell you right now, and talk to friends of mine about this all the time. You got a pitcher, he's going out there, he's dominating. He's given up, you know, two hits over six innings, but his pitch count might be high. Let's say it's at 110. Maybe he had a couple of walks in there, but doesn't give up anything. And now all of a sudden you see a new pitcher. Jeff, it feels like the best opportunity maybe to scratch and maybe get a run or two in a tight ball game. But with the Dodgers, they give these guys such short hooks that all of a sudden now, okay, you just walked the guy, Tony the Tiger, in the fourth inning. Tony Gonsolin's like Alex Wood, Mr. 4 1/3 innings pitched.
He's now Tony the Tiger?
I have no idea. I don't know. I'm just so annoyed with the way the Dodgers handle bullpens.
So the Dodgers, and also, by the way, their bullpen's not any good. That's the other problem.
What are they, 29th in baseball? I know Blake Trinan's been injured, but come on, Jeff.
Their bullpen has been bad. And look, that's the one thing where, again, I think
he's being kind.
Well, again, I think they'll win the NL West going out on the giant limb than I am. But they're not winning. They're not beating Atlanta in a playoff series.
Well, no, hold on a second here, buddy. Look. There's a possibility they can beat him. They have the talent. They have the capability. Walker Buehler, depending on where he's at in September, you know, they'll probably let him throw one
in. I don't think he's coming back this year.
I don't know whether he does or doesn't. I'm not really that concerned. I'm not a big Walker Buehler guy. I think the Dodgers have a lot of good starting pitchers. I don't think they have any great starting pitchers.
The Dustin May injury, I think, really hurt them as well. Yeah. I don't think people talk about it as much. He was, because now this is his second major injury. I don't think he's 2024 is when he's supposed to come back, or 2025, something like that.
Yeah, he's had a major issue. So, look, I am not saying they can't beat him. So, right now for you, you're taking Atlanta over the entire field in the National League, correct?
Baseball can happen in the postseason, as we know. Mm-hmm. But yes, it's.
Don't give us the Mets jinx, man. Please.
No, what Mets jinx?
You know there's a Mets
legitimately
jinx.
Last year's the first time that I genuinely thought they could win a World Series, and of course we know how that ended. But Atlanta is so much better than everyone else in that league. We know how things look, it's a best of five baseball series. Weird things can happen in that, as we know. That's
my point, right? The Mariners win 116 games in 2001 and the Yankees beat them in six games. You know, in baseball, if a team gets off to a start the way the Tampa Bay Rays did, and then they lose seven in a row and they win the final game before the All-Star break, nobody's talking about it because they're in first place. But, I mean, that's a big slide. Now, if it happened to start the season, the perception of it is completely different. If it happens in September, it's completely viewed differently. So all I'm saying is the Braves are playing the best baseball of anyone. We know that. However, we're still only in July. They're not crowning anybody in July. And it's like the old Denny Green line. You want to crown them, crown them. But then, you know, all I'm saying is we got a long way to go.
So for tonight, you like under 8.5 with Urias and Verlander.
No, I like the under 4.5 in the first five.
4.5 first half.
Yeah, and I'm not generally a big first five guy, but to me, I don't want to get involved with the Dodgers bullpen. Also, 4-4 beats you, but 2-2 in the first five doesn't beat you because you don't have that guaranteed run.
I want to ask you about the Reds and the Brewers, because we mentioned this earlier. The second series that they play of three series within 21 days of each other. Just bizarro scheduling. And also, by the way, the series at the end of July is the last time they'll see each other this year because of the new balance schedule, which is also nonsense. But that's a different argument for a different day. It's Corbin Burns and Graham Ashcraft. Ashcraft coming back off of injury. Minus 115 for Burns, minus 105 at DK for Cincinnati. Totals 10. Amal, I don't have any plays on this game individually.
Yeah.
But for Cincinnati, to me, it's more important for Cincinnati to take care of their business against Milwaukee than vice versa. I think the Reds are more capable of being able to go on another spurt. But if the Reds put away, let's say the Reds sweep Milwaukee and go up four games here, okay?
What? No, wouldn't they be up two games? Aren't they in second place?
They're one ahead.
Yeah.
Right now. The Reds are one ahead of Milwaukee.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, okay. So you're saying if the Reds sweep Milwaukee.
Reds sweep.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay.
If the Reds sweep Milwaukee, you have a chance to put the hammer completely down if you're Cincinnati by the trade deadline in that circumstance.
No question.
Milwaukee, yes, it would be important for them, but I think Milwaukee's more prone to blow a lead than Cincinnati. I know that may be backwards to some because we don't trust Cincinnati's pitching at all, and the Reds are a team that hasn't been there with this group. But it's just, for me, Amal, they are not – you throw everything out for what Cincinnati was pre-Ellie De La Cruz. With Ellie De La Cruz, they have been a bunch of bludgeoners because their offense is awesome, and their pitching's only going to get a little bit better as they get healthier, with Lodolo coming back, with the potential trade at the trade deadline, with Hunter Green coming back. So, I think Cincinnati, these games are much more important to them than they are to Brew Crew.
Well, I don't agree with you, because I'm looking at the Milwaukee schedule coming up. After this three-game set, they go to Philadelphia. They got the Braves for three, Reds at home for three. They're at Atlanta. Excuse me. Those are some challenging games. Yes. The way the Braves are playing right now, you don't want to have to be facing that team. I think the Cincinnati schedule down the stretch, particularly in September and October, is easier and more favorable. They get the Cardinals for a bunch of games. They get the Tigers, the Pirates. I think Cincinnati's got a great opportunity. I think this team can win this division.
Right now, again, a game up. Milwaukee's still the betting favorite in that division, which I don't think is right.
What's the price?
What are they now? Minus 130 now in the division?
Yeah.
It's not good. I don't get that. Minus 130 on Milwaukee, even money on the Reds.
I don't know. Sometimes the odds makers kind of draw a line in their position and just are firm on it, and I think sometimes it can be a mistake.
Cardinals, if you want the Cardinals, you can get 20-1 on the Cardinals. I think that you're missing a zero on that.
They're 11.5 games back out. Look, in baseball, we see teams get on a stretcher. I think you have to be around 6 or 7 games if you're going to realistically make a push in terms of getting into the postseason or the winning the division with about 70 games remaining.
Cubs right now in third, plus 850 in the National League Central. I talked about it earlier in the week. The Cubs should sell. They should definitely sell Stroman. They should probably sell Bellinger. Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of pieces that the Cubs could actually get. They could definitely get something good for Stroman. Bellinger is even one that if you're a team that's legitimately in a race, why not take a shot and see if you can get lightning in a bottle with Bellinger for 2 months?
It's yeah, absolutely it. Right. And plus, he's a plus defender in center field.
Yeah, I know, 100%. It just, those are the two names for Chicago that I fully expect to be on the move. Coming back, we have more to get to in baseball on Friday, and also to, you know what, I know we're 2 weeks away from the big fight, but maybe we can get some thoughts
sure.
on the big fight coming to Vegas in 2 weeks from now, Crawford and Spence. That's next, Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus instantly. Use the promo code VSIN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. Welcome back in. It is Sharp Money. I'm Jeff Parles. I'm Amal Shaw alongside. Amal, some more games in baseball on Friday. Intriguing matchup in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Orioles and Marlins. Two teams, both currently in the number one wild card in their respective leagues. Neither team expected to be in this position at this point going into the year. Dean Kramer and Sandy Alcantara. Again, Alcantara has been all over the place off of his Cy Young award-winning season a year ago. Orioles are minus 140 at DK, plus 120 on the takeback on Miami tonight with a total of 8.
You know, to me, when you look at this team, this Marlins team's got a good pitcher going in Big Sandy tonight, former Cy Young Award winner, but overall he struggled. This is a good opportunity to reset and get this second half of the season going in a positive direction. You mentioned Baltimore with Dean Kramer on the bump. This team has played incredible baseball. The number just keeps continuing to elevate right now with the Orioles at minus 134, Jeff. It was as low as around 120, 115 earlier today.
Orioles, again, right now, the number one wild card in the American League, only a shout away from the East Division lead, 2 games behind Tampa. And again, that with everything, you know, Amal, you mentioned it before that you like Tampa to win the AL East. Is there any bit of concern, though?
Yes.
That Tampa had such an absurd start to the year, and here we are going into the second half, that Tampa's lead over Baltimore is only 2?
Look, the reason why I'm picking Tampa over Baltimore right now is simply because they've got a four-game lead in the win column. The Orioles would have to win four in a row to kind of get that level. But, Jeff, to me, the way the Rays have played, and this is the one thing I've always thought about with Tampa for several years, they seem to score their runs in basically two innings a game. They might get a two spot in the third, they might get a three spot in the fifth inning, and then they wind up with five runs. They're not consistent across the board offensively. Their bullpen hasn't been as good as you would like for a team like this. This Baltimore team can hit the ball much better than we see out of the Tampa Bay Rays. Adley Rutschman's been outstanding, as we saw the type of season he's had as an all-star. So for me, I think there's some concern. I'm just not a long-term believer in the Baltimore Orioles. If the Yankees and the Blue Jays were closer in record to where Baltimore is, I would definitely be in favor of those two types of teams over the Baltimore Orioles.
Again, Baltimore was so far ahead of schedule last year when they were in the race basically the whole year through. Now they're ahead of schedule being a potential division winner right now. I think Baltimore's better than Toronto. At least I trust them more. I don't trust the Blue Jays at all. Maybe this is just me being stubborn with Toronto.
Yeah.
But for a team with all this talent that they've had now for 3 years.
Yeah.
And 9 games over 500. Look, you could win 90 games with the pace they're on right now, which is a darn good season. But there's something with that starting rotation that scares me. As great as Kevin Gausman has been, they're basically one every six starts, he doesn't pitch well. Manoah, finally back in the majors, pitched well in his first start back. Who knows where his mental state could be in a few weeks if it starts going the wrong direction again. There's something with Toronto I don't trust. The Yankees, it's obvious. Without Judge, if he's out for an extended period of time, that could be the end for the Yankees. And he's already been out for an extended period of time. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just being stubborn with Toronto. But there's something that I just don't fully trust with them.
I don't disagree with you. Outside of Bichette and Guerrero, I don't know if I trust the lineup as much. I'm not a big fan of George Springer. He does have power, but again, he's like a 270 kind of guy. I'm not necessarily overwhelmed with him. The pitching is inconsistent. Berríos goes tonight, but Gausman is the guy that's a key for this team. I'm just not necessarily in disagreement where you're coming from on this Toronto team. I look at right now, I think all three divisions in the American League are up for grabs. I favor Tampa. I would favor the Guardians, and I would favor the Texas Rangers in the three divisions at this point in time in terms of who's going to win it.
So going to another game here on this Friday slate, speaking of the Blue Jays, they take on the Diamondbacks. There's some really interesting interleague series right out of the gate here in the All-Star break. It's almost like when interleague play was a rarity in baseball in the early 2000s, late 90s, they would do this sort of thing. Berríos and Ryan Nelson. So Toronto's a big favorite tonight, Amal. They're minus 170. It's plus 155 on a takeback for Arizona. Isn't this just kind of one of those circumstances that if you're going to bet this game, you just take the big price on the D-backs? A plus 155 is a pretty wild price on them.
Yeah, I think Ryan Nelson's getting started tonight. Yes. He has not been particularly strong, but you're absolutely right. I think this is one where if you're going to take it, nothing wrong with taking the Diamondbacks at such a high plus price. If I was taking the Blue Jays here, I'd go run line at plus 115. This is generally a hitter-friendly ballpark. You're going against a pitcher, Nelson, who's got a whip of 1.43. Just something to consider when you're looking at this matchup. Berríos on the bump. Last start on July 6th was incredible. 7 innings, 1 hit. I mean, that's about as good as it gets for him in that one. And, here's the funny thing. He didn't even get the win. They scored 6 runs in the 11th inning.
Well, that was the cataclysmic total beat game.
I thought the total was 8.5.
Did it end up getting?
It was at 8.
Oh, okay, so yeah. if you had a late 8, you're in trouble there.
If I had the under, it would have got to 9.
Okay. Now you're starting to sound like me. That's not a good thing.
I'm not saying that because I was watching the game and I was sitting there thinking, because I'm a 95% under player compared to overs in baseball, mm-hmm. but. There's some of these beats. I tell you, I'm not saying from a win or loss standpoint, Jeff. I can tell you right now, nobody winds up in the longest game of the day more than I do. I don't even know how it is. It has nothing to do with it. I could be winning, losing, doesn't make a difference. But the game just turns out to be the longest one of the day.
The game that goes for 3.5 hours, which is a long game.
It could be a Marlins-Pirates game, which you'd expect to be 242. No, somehow I'll find 325 on that one.
Speaking of the Pirates, Rich Hill tonight. So the Giants, I brought this up earlier, Amal. When you look at the roster, Stripling goes for them. They're minus 130 favorites at DK over in Pittsburgh. The Giants are the one team I'm most perplexed by mm-hmm. in all of baseball. Because I look at the roster, and it's really just a pretty pedestrian roster. But whatever Zahidi has done, and whatever the front office has done, they've been able to build a winning culture with rosters that look pretty pedestrian on the surface. They're 2.5 games out of the division lead. They're in the third wild card right now. They are the one team of all that I still can't figure out, though. And even though I can't figure them out, I have more faith in them than I do Arizona and Miami long-term, as I said earlier in the show.
Well, I can appreciate where you're coming from. It just depends on which team you believe in. I love the way Logan Webb is pitching right now for this team. And I think this Duvall on the back end of that bullpen is lights out. Tyler Rogers, the left-hander. I feel like the Giants right now, they're 8th, 9th inning combination, really tough. If you don't get to the Giants by the 7th, I feel like it's a tough team to beat in the 8th and 9th.
Well, if Logan Webb can throw a perfect game, it's definitely, a complete game, definitely tough like he did at the end, the final game of the first half. And then look, now that Duvall has figured out the pitch clock, he is dominant the moment. Yeah. Absolutely dominant at that back end.
He's tremendous. This Giants team, my concern is offensive consistency. You know, we talk about that with a lot of teams in baseball. Maybe at some point in time, they'll wake up and realize if you just actually put the ball in play, get runners on base, and you score them, you can win, instead of trying to worry about every damn launch angle in the world.
Looking at another one here tonight, one last one I want to get to here, Amal, because, look, there are some bad games that are out there tonight. The Braves are nearly a $3 favorite against the White Sox, who Wyatt tried to sell us on a playoff ticket on them, not happening. By the way, has there been a bigger disappointment for a guy who came up with all the noise that Michael Klopek did, and now he's just so blatantly average them all?
Look, there's a lot of guys that come around that you think they're going to be fantastic. I mean, you know, you look on that roster, Dylan Cease, another one, had a great year last year. Dylan Cease has not pitched particularly well this year, but you mentioned Klopek. He's a guy that you would thought is going to be a frontline potential one or two, and it has just never materialized that way.
The Braves, like I said, nearly a $3 favorite at DK minus 260 behind us. Are you buying the Red Sox? Are you buying the Red Sox that they could legitimately have a shot at this? They're only a game behind the Yankees in the AL East right now.
Yeah, I know, but it just shocks me. Bellow
tonight against Hendricks.
He's been outstanding. Good opportunity here for the Red Sox. Like the price here. With the wind must be blown out. We got a total of 9 tonight. But I think the Red Sox are a dangerous team. I'll tell you what, Jeff, I got to give you credit. You're the first person to ask me about the Red Sox. I haven't heard anybody mention the Red Sox potentially for the postseason.
Well, you know what? They're clearly looked at as the worst team in the AL East.
Yeah.
And they're in last. They played very well going into the All-Star break to kind of get back in this mix. Their lineup is excellent. Yeah. There's no arguing that. It's just been with them over the last few years, like the year they beat the Rays in 2021 in the division series is because their pitching pitched over their head that year. Last year, their pitching regressed to what I thought they'd be in 21, and they were mediocre.
Yeah.
No. It really just depends with them because the 424 runs is the most in that division given up by a wide margin, 30 more than Baltimore, who's given up the second most in that division. I just don't think they have the pitching to realistically stay in this. But, hey, they are a franchise. You know, if they're even remotely in the mix, they will fool themselves into thinking they should be buyers at the deadline. We wrap things up. Final thoughts on a Friday. Sharp Money here on Visa.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
It's always NFL, or excuse me, always football season here. And it's always good to know that the NFL betting guide is already out. Yes, released in June for the first time ever. Our NFL betting guide will help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL season with in-depth betting profiles of every team, including advanced stats, proven betting systems, and proprietary betting trends, plus best bets on season win totals, futures, and props. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19 and get your digital copy of VSiN's NFL betting guide today, or take advantage of our summer kickoff special that gets you access to everything we do through the Super Bowl for only $175. Sign up today, VSiN.com/subscribe. Final segment for us before Tim Murray and Jared Smith take it for 3 hours on VSiN primetime coming your way in 15 minutes. Amal, I just want to ask you something real quick about college football, because I know you are passionate about it, but we are now 5 weeks away from week zero. Mm-hmm. The game's on the 26th, where I'm just curious, Amal, for these week zero games, do you handle early season college football differently than you handle games like in week four, week five, when you have more data?
I do not. Depending on the matchup, right? It depends on if it's a team that I follow closely and someone that I'd be interested in. You look at week zero, Navy, Notre Dame, UTEP, Jacksonville State, UMass, New Mexico State, Ohio, San Diego State, Hawaii, Vanderbilt, San Jose State, USC, and FIU, Louisiana Tech. Obviously followed the Trojans closely, Notre Dame, San Diego State I follow. So these other teams, yeah, I follow them, but not to the level I do these other ones that I mentioned. So for me, it doesn't change much from a dynamic standpoint when you look at the opening weekend.
Has there ever been a decent week zero game? The only one I can think of was the one year Miami and Florida played against each other. Other than that, these are really just ugh, games.
I agree with you. They're horrendous. They really, truly are. I will tell you the opening weekend's going to be fantastic. And I wish the Clemson-Duke game, which is an ACC game, I wish the LSU-Florida State game was Monday night.
Why is Duke-Clemson the Monday night game?
No idea.
Bizarre. You got Oregon State and San Jose State on CBS, though, on that on Sunday the 3rd, as we all expected. LSU and Florida State is that Sunday night game that first week of the year. That was, of course, Florida State won in ridiculous fashion last year.
Yep.
In that game at the Superdome. Now they're in Orlando at Camping World, so getting tilted towards LSU crowd-wise last year, tilted towards the Noles this year in that game.
Yeah, I think Florida State's going to win the football game. I don't know why they're a dog in this game. They're in what would be obviously their home state, but I just think Jordan Travis is he's a top three Heisman contender. I think he's outstanding. He can run the ball. He can throw the football. Florida State's going to be a very, very good team. And Jeff, if they get through their first two of four or five games, they play Clemson, at Death Valley at the end of September. They can get those games. They got a great shot to go undefeated and get in the playoff.
Real quick. So LSU and Florida are technically playing back-to-back, but they didn't play at their own stadiums. They're playing back-to-back neutral sites.
No. Yeah. LSU-Florida State, not LSU.
Yeah, that's what I meant. LSU-Florida State.
Technically, they are neutral sites, yes.
Yeah, correct. Yes,
why did that? Never mind.
What's your question?
I don't understand your question either.
Well, why if you're doing a
home and home?
Home and home. Go Florida State at LSU. LSU at Florida State.
Because I think neither team wanted to play a true road game. And so, this way, if you play the game in Baton Rouge, you 100% of the tickets are LSU's minus a few thousand that they'll give your team and vice versa. And I think for Florida State, you felt like you had a better opportunity. They won the game in down there in the Mercedes-Benz Dome, or what's the old Superdome. So I like Florida State in this game. You know, they should have punched in a touchdown. Shouldn't even allow LSU to come down the field and tie it up.
Oh, that was
or potentially tie
that, it. Again, that was one of the more idiotic finishes you're ever going to see. The blocked PAT, like you said, Florida State should have scored, and LSU should have never gotten the ball. It was just all idiocy when it comes to that. These week zero games are pretty brutal. There's no arguing that. Notre Dame's a 20-point favorite in the game against Navy. That game, by the way, in Ireland and Dublin. Even though, hey, remember last year you had Northwestern beating Nebraska and just the ways to lose bowl in that one.
Wasn't our guy Danny Burke there? For that one?
Danny was there for that. He
went to the Nebraska game last year?
He was there.
Just got his heart ripped out, but at least he was in Ireland, so he got to, hit the pubs afterward.
Hell, you're a Nebraska fan. You should start drinking beforehand.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Dakota mentioned right here. Wasn't that the game that they had free beers because the machines weren't working, right?
No idea.
There's something weird with that. I don't remember what it was, but there was something weird with that. The only game in week zero that looks at least somewhat intriguing is San Diego State and Ohio, which.
A big Bobcat supporter, are you?
Well, I don't know. Well, here's the thing. San Diego State, San Diego State was disappointing at the beginning of last year. That stadium is very weirdly constructed. The new place, yep. Snapdragon Stadium, where They did not do. They did not take into account that the sun exists, especially in the early season.
Well, sorry, go ahead. I was going to say.
But the, Amal, that's the only game that's even somewhat intriguing. By the way, I do like the Aztecs in that game laying four right now.
Yeah, not a bad price there. O'Rourke is back at quarterback for the Bobcats.
Yep.
Thank you. Yeah. It's going to be an interesting matchup for sure. But tell you what, San Diego State should be better than they've been. And, you know, Rocky Long and then now Barney Rubble, better known as Brady Hoke, they've had some defenses. But, my God, can we get a pulse on offense? Holy cow. San Diego State's quarterbacks look like they literally are playing football for the first time.
San Diego State's the only program I've ever seen that have their wide receivers wear 90.
Well, you know, they wanted to know, let you know who the blockers downfield were going to be.
That's true.
They just called Brady Hoke Barney Rubble.
Yeah, it did.
He had a good year at Michigan.
Hey. I agree. Couldn't win a game, really.
Oh, man. You know, again, the Heisman, I want to look at the Heisman before we go here today, Amal. Caleb Williams is plus 550.
That's a pretty good number.
Of course, as you know, Archie Griffin, the last one to win back-to-back and the only one to win two.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like the year, if someone's going to do it, Caleb Williams feels like the guy that is going to be able to finally bust through and win that second Heisman that has been so elusive for guys just because voters don't want to vote the same guy twice.
I would agree with you. I think he's going to have a monster year. But remember, Lamar Jackson statistically had a better year.
Better year, too.
Yeah, in the year following the year he won the Heisman. So I think it's going to be a challenge here for Caleb Williams. But again, playing for USC, a team that should be somewhere in that 10-2, 11-1, 9-3 range bodes well for him. Quinn Ewers, 12-1. Well, I'm surprised Ewers is the second favorite there. I like Jordan Travis at 14-1. There's a couple of names. Marvin Harrison Jr. at 20-1. He should be 2,000-1. Listen, wide receivers don't win the Heisman Trophy unless one thing. They're punt returner, kick returners. Think about the three guys that have won at that position. Tim Brown in 87, Desmond Howard in 91, and then Devontae Smith in, what, 2020 or whatever year it was, or 21, I don't remember. But
20.
All of them played on special teams. They run jet sweeps and other things. They're not doing that with Marvin Harrison.
Was Devontae Smith the returner? I thought it was Jalen Waddle on that team.
On punts. I think Devontae might have been on kickoff. I don't remember. But at least they ran some sweeps with him in there, here and there. He was utilized more than just completely at the receiver position. You're not going to see Marvin Harrison coming around on a jet sweep like they did with Garrett Wilson in State College.
Yeah, but, I mean, man, out of all the – I've seen my fair share of great Ohio State wide receivers, Marvin Harrison's special. And, Amal, a question for you. Who's going to be the quarterback for Ohio State? I think that might help Marvin Harrison out is that there is kind of a big unknown.
Kyle McCord probably, but not definitively. Kyle McCord was Marvin Harrison Jr.'s high school teammate. And then you've got Devin Brown, a kid out of Utah, who could also be there. Some of these odds are short. I'll tell you a guy that I like, not this year, but in 2024, Drew Aller at Penn State. I think his kid's going to be absolutely a dude. If Oklahoma's a good quiet year, Dylan Gabriel, Jeff, at 35-1.
I don't think Oklahoma's going to be good. That's my concern. I think that Oklahoma and Texas, we talked about this a little bit yesterday with the Big 12. The Big 12 title odds are bizarro, where Texas is almost even money, which Texas will find a way to not win the conference. Oklahoma is the second short shot at plus 350. I don't know how good they really are. I don't trust Venables. I don't think Venables is going to be a good head coach long-term, Amal. I think he's going to be out by year five there, and they're going to be looking for someone new.
Well, that's interesting. I said Willie Taggart would not last at Florida State. He got fired. There's a couple other coaches along the way I've called that have gotten fired. I think Venables is going to do a great job. He, to me, is still as good of a defensive coach as there is in college football. I think you're going to see a drop-off at Clemson. He was such an he was so instrumental in terms of Dabo Swinney's success. I think Oklahoma will be fine. They just got a huge commitment yesterday from a five-star defensive tackle. I think Venables will have that team going in the right direction.
I will say this, just looking at this, these Heisman odds, Sam Hartman at 16-1, I think, is worth a shot.
If you think
Notre Dame is going to be high-end, because they will have a vertical passing game for the first time in forever with him.
Sam Hartman's one of the most enjoyable players to watch in college football. By the way, Michael Penix's not bad at 16-1 because they'll be able to score some points.
That's all the time we have here on Sharp Money. For Wyatt Tomchak, Amal Shah, I'm Jeff Parles. Peace in primetime with Tim Murray and Jarrett Smith coming your way next.